Thank you so much, Eduardo, for sharing with us this terrible plight, which is when you are deported. As you know, Mexico has a huge population, and it is a unique migration population that migrates to just one country, which is the United States. We have like 11 million Mexicans living in the United States, of which 7 million are undocumented. And I would like to share with you now a program that we put together, the federal government, to address the healthcare issues that this migrant population faces when living in the United States. Years ago, we developed the concept that was called the Ventanilla de Salud in the Mexican consulates all throughout the United States. And this started because we, well, let me just say, 20 years ago, I lived in Chicago. And at that time was when I first got to meet and got to get a first-hand knowledge of what the Mexican community faced in the United States. So I had the huge opportunity when going back to Mexico to then, when Dr. Julio Frank was the Secretary of Health of Mexico, have him address the issue of how we had to be co-responsible in providing health, or at least oriented our people here in the United States. And then we started what was a very successful program in Mexico, which are the National Health Weeks. We started doing the National Health Weeks, which what the Mexican community often relates. I mean, everybody in Mexico has their children vaccinated at some point, and they have their cartilla, so that they, and you need the cartilla de vacunación to enroll in the school. So we replicated this strategy, which was very successful in Mexico, here in the United States. And in every month of October, we did what we call the Binational Health Week, which then other communities from other countries, Guatemala, Ecuador, joined us in this effort of basically health prevention and promotion. And then the community told us, why only 1 week a year? We want a more permanent orientation for our health. And that's how the concept of Ventanillas de Salud is born. This is a program designed to improve the physical and mental well-being of Mexicans living in the U.S. and to increase their access to primary services to promote preventive health care and reduce emergency health care. We want them to find like a medical home. And here with us is Dr. Ilan Shapiro, who is one of our advisors at the Advisory Council of the Ventanillas de Salud. Thank you very much for being here, Ilan. So we have 50 Ventanillas de Salud in the United States. We also have them at the border. And as I said, the idea is to improve access to primary and preventive health services, increase public insurance coverage, and promote a culture of prevention in the health of Mexicans living in the United States. The idea is that you are the first responsible for your health. It is a personal, intransferable responsibility that needs a daily effort. So what we want is when our community goes to the Mexican consulate because they need a matricula or a passport or whatever, they can find in a corner what we call this Ventanilla de Salud, and it's different if you live in Arizona or if you live in New York or if you live in California. So we partner with the proper agency that can then provide the information that is relevant for the family that lives in the United States. And it is, for us, it is not, regardless of their documented condition. So what we do is the Secretariat of Health provides seed money, which is $2.4 million. And then, I mean, I'm going to go into how we work, but we work with the, also with the Secretariat of Foreign Affairs and with the Institute of Mexicans Abroad, putting together this program. Basically, these are the services that are provided on the issues that have already been addressed here today: nutrition, obesity, diabetes, women's health, child health, mental health, addictions. We have these referrals to healthcare services, this information and pre-enrollment to what Eduardo has already addressed, the Seguro Popular. As you know, in Mexico, the system of health is very fragmented. We have the people that have the formal work, and then they belong to the IMSS, and I am a public servant, belong to the ISSSTE. And then we have this old huge, what we used to address as the open population that didn't have any coverage for their health. So that was the initiation of the Seguro Popular. And you can enroll, if you're a migrant here in the United States and you have family in Mexico, which is very much common, then you can have them enrolled in their Seguro Popular. You can tell them here, I mean, I know you are living in Morelia or in Michoacán. You can go, you can enroll your family that lives in Mexico, not in the United States. And we also do some screenings in the Mexican consulate. This is kind of the visitor service flow. I mean, you come to the ventanilla, and either you have a personalized health information. There's an intake form that you that is filled out. You might have personal services, no, and or you can have individual health information, counseling, and then referral. Or sometimes the ventanilla de salud just have like workshop information sessions only. We have, for example, at in El Paso, Texas, some days of the week that we have women's clinic. So the women just go there to have their screenings, their breast screenings, cancer screenings. They don't even go into the consulado, but they know exactly when the clinic, the mobile clinic, will be attending, and then they go and get. And get their screenings, because one of the things that also Eduardo said, when you migrate, then all the health services are interrupted. Usually we had this circular migration between Mexico and the United States, but after 9/11, this circular migration interrupted. The people that came here couldn't return back to Mexico anymore, and they interrupted the health care that they used to get back when they went to Mexico. They interrupted their health care services. So this is a way now we can orient them, no? So it is a unique health service program, and the program of activities also include health fairs, group workshops, presentations, local community events, collaborative activities with local institutions and schools. This is all done in a trusting environment for the Mexican community, which is the consulates. They feel safe at the Mexican consulates, and so they rely on the information that is being provided for them. We have specialist materials, culturally and linguistically appropriate, to provide adequate information in Spanish. Some of the results that we have of the Ventanillas de Salud is we have looked after 1.5 million individuals with 3.8 million services provided. And I'm not going to go into this in detail, but I mean, as I've already said, basically the services are on information and counseling on specific health issues. I might point out that some have received the influenza vaccine, and happily that most of these influenza vaccines were provided, administered to children. Some over 100,000 visitors have been referred to community clinics for follow-up care. And also, the mental health issues are very important, and we have this percentage, 6% of referrals to secondary care. And, well, as we have been speaking throughout this morning, you can see that we have severe problems nationally with the overweight and obese, with the blood pressure, with cholesterol, which is very high in the measurements that have been done. And just relating to the Ventanillas de Salud that are at the border, here is a service, the served population over 185,000 with 1.2 million services provided. And here, I mean, the overweight and obese, if it was around the 50% in the national Ventanillas de Salud, here we have a higher prevalence of overweight and obese. So that is why it's so important what RJ Dutton presented to us, in the need that we need to tackle this problem, not nationally, but especially also at the border. We have very severe problems. Basically, what we have done wouldn't have worked without national partnerships. I mean, that has been the key of the success of the Ventanilla de Salud program. We have partnered with the CDC and the health and HHS in these campaigns, influenza vaccination, and reinforcing the messages of getting the flu vaccine. With NIOSH, we have developed health education materials on occupational and safety health. NIOSH has been great. Also, we have one of its members, Mike Mike Flynn, who is also serves at the Advisory Council of the Ventanilla de Salud. With HRSA, indeed, we have a collaboration with community health clinics to ensure that our Ventanilla identifies which are the community health centers in the region, and that then we can reinforce communication also when they can have access to the affordable healthcare. With the American Heart Association as well, we have cardiovascular health information and also referrals for screening. For text for baby, we have been enrolling our women pregnant through the mobile information services. We have a huge problem as well with teenage pregnancy, not only in Mexico, but along the border. We have a huge problem with that. With the National Eye Health Education Program, we also have training our VDS staff on diabetes and healthy eyes. And of course, cancer is also a great issue. With Susan G. Komen, we have our collaboration to address key breast health barriers. What we have done over the past years has not been homogeneous. I mean, basically, someone knocked the door of the consulate and we let them, he said, I want to help you with the health of your people, and we just opened the door. So we have been working into really providing an homogeneous service now, and that's why we call our Ventanilla de Salud 2.0, our second phase of the Ventanillas. So we are really now trying to strengthen and expand the program for greater efficiency and impact. We have like the Fresno, Kansas, New York, Portland, and Washington, D.C. in this second phase. And now we have expanded to include L.A., San Diego, Dallas, El Paso, and Chicago. And the idea is to have a standardized intake form. We need to really measure what we are doing in order to improve and in order to knock more doors, because with the money, the seed money that the Secretaría de Salud is provided, we are not really going to get anywhere, basically, with now the oil prices dropping down and the peso also dropping along with the oil prices. So the money that we have, I mean, I said it's 2.7 million, but it's really 35 million pesos that are now not $2.7 million. So we are having those problems. And that's why we need now to knock other doors. We are also putting together this database in the idea that we need to strengthen data collection, reporting, and analysis. We need to really train, I mean, this is a really focus, to train our and staff, have good training and staff development. And also we are doing now some research initiatives in specific areas of health, pediatric services, obesity, cancer, and the HPV vaccine. We also have collaborative protocol with educational, medical, and governmental institutions. And we are really collecting also success stories, because really it's amazing how you can touch a life of someone who doesn't probably speak very well English and that needs to live in the United States because our country hadn't given them the good opportunities to have a good job. That is the only reason why the Mexicans migrate, because our country, unfortunately, hadn't been able to give them a good job, and what they only want is that their children can have a better life than they did have. And well, we have this advisory board, of which Dr. Ilan Shapiro here is a member, and we rely heavily on our advisory board for their experience and for identifying funding opportunities, of course. And I thank you very much for your attention, and I would now like to open the floor if there are any questions.
I work in San Diego on that Ventanilla program. Could you help me understand what that would look like for migrants that are in the community? I'm working in Tijuana as well as E14, so I kind of understand the community there, but I don't understand the Ventanilla's program.
The Ventanilla is located inside the Mexican consulate in San Diego. You go to the Mexican consulate, and then you can ask, where is the Ventanilla de Salud? And there's going to be a table with someone there, and he's going to give you orientation. For example, I am undocumented, but I have children. Then they can tell you, you can have your children vaccinated. Where do you live? And then they can do the referral to go to a community health clinic that is near where you live. That is, and then they're going to check, I mean, they're going to have your blood pressure taken, and it depends on the day, they have a program, you might even get some information on, I don't know, diabetes, obesity, you know. So you can go there and ask for information regarding your health.
Sure. Thank you. So I think both. I mean, the Board of Health Commission members, and also working with the state health departments in each of the states. So I think where you're able to change policy, you try to change policy depending on the state. Some states are more conservative than others, but sometimes it's a matter of repackaging the issue so that it's better understandable. But I think when you're able to change policy, that's the route to go. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
No, that's great.
Sure.
For all the Latino population. You know what? We had our Ventanilla in Miami, at the Consulate of Miami, and the people from Uruguay that live in Miami went to the Mexican Consulate in Miami. Now they have already opened their own Ventanilla de Salud in Miami, all the nationals from Uruguay. And I had the fortune of having the Foreign Affairs Minister of Uruguay thanking the Mexican Minister for this. So it is not only for Mexican nationals.
Yes.
And I was also curious about what were the long-term plans for people like who just get dropped off in Matamoros or Tijuana? Is there a plan to send them back to wherever they came from originally, or is that not within the scope of the health program?
Okay.
What their long-term future is?
In many cases, the migrants say to us, they want to stay in the border because they are close to their families in the U.S. In Tijuana, there are a fence where the people see each other, one part of the family in the U.S. side of the border and the other part in the Mexican side. But there are increasingly amount of migrants who say, I want to come back to my place of origin because I'm sick. Maybe I'm going to die in a few months or years, and I want to return to my place of origin. But in the many of the cases, when the family left behind in the U.S., they decided to stay in the border. But sometimes they migrate in along the border because they drop off in Matamoros, but the family is in California, so they move to Tijuana or to Mexicali to be closer to their family.
And let me just add that we have now a program that is called Somos Mexicanos, in which the Mexico federal government wants to reintegrate this population and have them have a good job and can have access to schools. So we are now putting together, as we have now been seeing these massive deportations, that we have a responsibility of welcoming our population that had to leave our country and have them to reintegrate in a social and productive way back in the communities of origin. It is very difficult sometimes for them to go back. You know, it's kind of, they look like defeated within their communities. But we have been doing, for example, access to schools. If the people come, sometimes you couldn't enroll because you didn't have your birth certificate registered at the consulate. Now we have, we are done with that, and you can have access to education and health, regardless if they have been, if they have a little note that the Mexican consulate does.
The yes, but it occurs in maybe 1 hour is the time where they are dropped by the U.S. Migration authorities to the Mexican migration authorities. Maybe they spend 1-2 hours in that office, and they receive some video that they love, that video. And it's informative. We have some flyers to explain them how the HIV is transmitted. But sometimes we must to say, well, you must to go to the Centro de Salud in Tijuana to ask for more information, or to call to the CENSIDA phone, information call center. But it's basically what we're doing there.
RJ, you had a question.
I wanted to ask a question. I don't know if there's a good answer. You know, I know that this, the tent, you know, you're talking about the program in Tijuana and Matamoros, but there's detention centers, you know, throughout the border region. I know there's several in Texas, big ones. And the screening for tuberculosis occurs, you know, there. And there's always been a discussion among the health authorities on the border, you know, how to better ensure that these people are treated, you know, completely. Instead of you diagnose a person in detention with tuberculosis, then I don't even know what's going on with HIV. Mm-hmm. I mean, because sometimes in a comorbidity or there's HIV detected, you know, how good a job are we doing in coordination with health authorities? We struggle, I know, in the discussions that there's not enough being done. Some people are being referred, but there's you lose these people, you might have multiple drug resistance. Mm-hmm. Developing, and so it's passive, it seems. Some people go, but some maybe we lose people. What's your thinking?
I know the case of Tijuana, the municipal authorities and state authorities of health, they are in contact with us. We refer the people who say to us, I have a TB diagnosis, but I have no more treatment. I stopped to take my medication 3 weeks ago, and they take care of these cases. Sometimes they have been detected drug resistance, so they are working to try to change this situation of these people, because it's hard to. Sometimes they just disappear. We have not their names, a phone number, an address, so they disappear, and we just don't know what's going with these people. But in many of the cases, we are having a very good follow-up with this case.
I was just on the same subject real quick. I was going to, our volume in Arizona and Sonora isn't as great as obviously San Diego, Tijuana, or Matamoros, but for instance, Arizona has a program that we share with Sonora called, it's a meet and greet program, where when ICE has a detainee who's under treatment for TB, their 180 days is up, so they have to deport them. ICE contacts the Arizona Department of Health Services tuberculosis program, gives them the clinical information. They're actually entered into our state MedSys program. TB program contacts the Office of Border Health. We contact the health authorities in Nogales, Sonora, and in Hermosillo, and we set up the date and time of the transfer. So when the patient is is deported to the line, the health authorities are there to meet them, and then they orient them into the process. But obviously our volume is much less. Maybe we do maybe once a week, where I'm sure that San Diego, Tijuana, or Matamoros has, you know, hundreds of people that are coming across. But with the smaller volume, you can do the handoff.
Yes, I was about to add that we have in the California-Baja California border region, we have the QTV or QDTV program that we definitely are in contact San Diego County City Control, are in contact with Baja California and all the referrals, all the people that are diagnosed with TB and doesn't complete the treatment yet are referred to the Baja California government. They know all the information and they can follow up with that.
Right.
We have services in France as well, that is for APR, multi-drug resistance patients as well.
And those patients sometimes going to Central America, South America too, which makes them even more complicated.
You have a question?
Yeah. I was going to say, we use Cure TV. I work with the Cook County Department of Public Health, and we use Cure TV. Program.
There's an equivalent program in Texas, actually.
Yeah, TVNet.
TVNet.
Yeah, they choose continuity of care. Go Royals!
we can attest to the efficiency of the program. We're able to serve a lot of our people here in the United States, not only in the metro area, but also in the rural areas where counties were over 50% of the population of Latino. And if you want to prevent anemia, you don't have access to any type of preventive services. I do have one question. I think we're doing a great job in preventing of primary care. However, we face a challenge with we find someone with a chronic disease like cancer, and they need treatment. It's really hard. Like, we've been able to work it, but it's like knocking doors, really. Like, we don't have a sustainable resource for, let's say, cancer treatment. Is there anything nationally or that other Ventanillas are doing?
Not in the United States. What we offer from the Mexican government is to repatriate the sick person and to have him or her receive his treatment in Mexico. And many times they do not want to go back to Mexico.
We had a very tough case now, hospital
gentleman
passed away because of that.
He
didn't go and leave his
grandkids. Right now, that is nationwide, that is probably the biggest issue that we hear. It used to be dialysis was a big issue, mm-hmm. but there's been some changes that patients are able to receive dialysis treatment. Mainly those changes were done because it's cheaper to give them dialysis than to let them go into crisis and then keep on hitting the emergency departments. But with cancer treatment, that's the biggest.
But thank you for pointing that out. We are going to keep on knocking doors as you have.
Questions about breastfeeding. I saw a lot of data about the high obesity rates in this zone. I was wondering about breastfeeding rates.
I should hope I can give them to you. Unfortunately, in Mexico, it is not a very high rate of breastfeeding. And we know that it's very important to promote and to have the determinant, the conditions for women to provide breastfeeding. I don't have the figures with me, but I can email them to you.
Yeah, that's a big component of this strategic plan for mm-hmm. sure. And I know there was a binational study done between Matamoros and Brownsville where there was interesting lessons. There was really good follow-up surveys done on women who were having babies. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned, I think, on the Mexican side about their policies about using formula, prohibiting, you know, people to jump right in on formula right away. That we, you know, could be lessons learned there, they have better policies in place. But I think things have changed in Mexico too, where they're catching up to us about, you know, our bad ways, I guess, in some ways. But yeah, there's some interesting efforts underway. I think the data, there's a reproductive health work group that's emerging now in the commission to sort of really focus on some of these issues. But breastfeeding cafes, I think, you know, we got a lot, we're not in, I don't think, the rates are there. I think Mexico may be doing better than the U.S., but I'm not sure.
In Mexico, do they provide formula to women who live
alone? That was the difference we saw. No, go ahead.
That is not forbidden at the hospital. Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect, because Nestle just decimated all the partners in the 70s with the LHA, and it was just decimated by the
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They're ahead there for sure.
The importance of like having
linguistically
appropriate materials and things. Have you run into issues in adequately teaching speakers in
indigenous languages? That's a great question. We do not have materials in indigenous languages. I don't know in Kansas if you have indigenous population. How do you? At the Mexican consulates, we have identified like translators, but I don't think they are working closely with health. They are more working closely with the protection department.
In Kansas, most of the people that we see are able to speak Spanish at a working level, but I do know that Lawrence works in the 1 hour with Kansas City. There is a pocket of population with indigenous language, and they have identified a local Mexican who is able to do the translation for them.
Yes, because how they get their health, it's completely different from the rest of us. We used to do binational health workshops in which we kind of educated or shared with the providers in the United States in how the indigenous population look at their health and how, I mean, it's another cosmogony, and that you tie the red ribbon para el mal de ojo, and that you have this, you lose your shadow, no? La pérdida de sombra, you lose your shadow. I mean, that is a sign of depression. You are losing your identity and you're losing yourself. And sometimes in these indigenous, within the indigenous communities, they have their own curandero. So they, in the migrant, in the seasonal farm workers, they will travel with this curandero throughout the regions. But that is a very good question. We haven't addressed yet the indigenous languages.
That might be a good project for the
Yeah, the indigenous population on the border, you know, the Kickapoo in Texas, you know, there's an issue there, but there is Spanish becomes the currency, you know, there's English, Spanish, and then Kickapoo. So Spanish is enough to get you through, you know, the tri-national meeting.
Yeah, we used to face questions like saying, why do you Mexicans always want to cure yourself with a tecito, with a tea? No? There is a problem. Well, thank you so much for your presence here today.